Hey everyone, hello. Welcome to Comedy History 101, where we school you in comedy. Today is a very, very, very special day here at Comedy History 101. We conclude our four-part series on the history of John Belushi. Yes, not one, not two, not three, not four. Oh, wait, four parts we've done on the history of John Belushi. Today's episode is going to be on the sad final years of John Belushi's life. So go back and listen to those previous episodes to, you know, bring yourself up to speed. And if you don't, well, I think you'll catch on, you know, soon enough. Also, a hell of a lot has gone on since our previous episode. I have relocated to Costa Rica. Oh yeah, well, what does that have to do with the history of comedy? Well, kind of a lot, because throughout this episode you might hear rain patter because I'm kind of living near a rainforest. Also, take time to like, subscribe, and comment on Comedy History 101, wherever you get your podcasts, or on our site, Comedy History 101. Do it. It helps people find our podcast. If you like the podcast, why not, you know, let other people know about it. Also, you can support Comedy History 101 on our Patreon page at patreon.com/CH101. Yes, we're an independent podcast, completely ad-free, and we like to keep it that way. So throw in a few bucks each month, and no ads for Casper mattresses. And without further ado...
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.
Earl Keese, a reserved, hard-working homeowner, sits calmly waiting for his dinner. Little does he know, he's about to meet the neighbors.
Eat it! Someone's moving into the Warren place!
No?
Funny time to be moving.
Okay, I'll stop it there.
That's enough.
It's very hot in here, and I get the idea. So what you heard up there, up front, right at the start, was a clip from the movie Neighbors, which starred John Belushi and was John Belushi's last screen role. And yes, you've tuned into another episode of Comedy History 101, where we school you in comedy. I am Harmon Leon. With me, as always, is Scott Colonico. Scott, have you seen the movie Neighbors?
I have, in fact, Harmon. I have seen the movie Neighbors.
What would be your brief synopsis of the 1981 movie Neighbors, directed by John Avildsen, who also directed Rocky?
Belushi actually plays a pretty good middle-aged man. It was he actually does pretty well, even though that's not the role he should have been in.
Oh, yeah, and we'll get into the role he should have been in a little later on this episode, but this is actually our conclusionary episode on the history of John Belushi. We have done three previous episodes. You might want to go back and check those out so you can be up to speed. Scott, should we do a quick rundown, like tag team here? Okay, we talked about Belushi at Second City. Hand it off to you.
Talk about Belushi at Saturday Night Live.
No, but you forgot about Belushi, National Lampoon Lemmings, and National Lampoon Radio. Pass it
on
to you.
Bishop Belushi and Saturday Night Live, Blues Brothers.
Animal House. Food Fight.
More Blues Brothers.
We're on a mission from God, Blues Brothers.
Yeah, mission from God, Blues Brothers. More Blues Brothers. Lots of cocaine during Blues
Brothers. Cocaine. A budget for cocaine on the movie The Blues Brothers.
Yeah,
which brings us to... Okay. Oh, sorry. Hand it off to you one more time.
No, we're done. We made it. We finished.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So go back and check out those episodes. This one, we are going to do the sad final years of John Belushi. Spoiler alert, he died in 1982 at the age of 33.
Yeah.
But
Okay, wait. Yeah, so his final years, where we left off last time, was the making of the Blues Brothers. How did the making in what's the elevator pitch on how the filming of the Blues Brothers went? What would you say about it?
A lot over budget, a lot over the cocaine budget, lots of cars smashed, but in the end it works.
Yeah, but Belushi at the time was a drug-fueled mess. It sent the budget spiraling out of control. And as you would think, after the Blues Brothers, people were a little hesitant to work with the former SNL star because he kind of gained a reputation of doing too much drugs on the set.
Cocaine in particular.
But after that, he kind of dried out a bit. He sobered up. You know, he kind of knew he had to take a change. I believe this was the era where he kind of retreated to Martha's Vineyard, Massachusetts.
Well, he wanted to get clean for when they were doing the Blues Brothers tour, because they actually did a tour. They did like 16 states in 16 days or something like that, or 16 in 20 days. And they actually, at that point, he hired a security guard to kind of keep him away from the drugs, a guy by the name of Smokey, who actually I just learned.
Smokey was still from Joe Walsh's bodyguard as well?
Yeah, it was Smokey. That. And he also worked with Nixon. He went with Nixon to China.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Oh, just a side note. There's a story, funny story about Nixon in China and Louis Armstrong in China. And Louis Armstrong had some marijuana in his music case, and Nixon spotted him at the airport and said, "Come on through. Hey, come on. It's Louis Armstrong." Have you ever heard that story?
No, that's a good one. I'll have to go into that.
But I think it might be
an
urban legend that...
Well, we'll look
the
look
urban
into
legend
it.
Is that Nixon helped Louis Armstrong smuggle drugs.
Alrighty, well, you know, as our listeners probably know, we have another channel that you sometimes get a star on. It's called This is a President. It's a YouTube channel where we go into all kind of presidential U.S. presidential trivia. So I'll look into that, Harmon, and see what the rumor is behind that.
And scene, back into the Belushi story. So after he cleaned up, what did Belushi do? Did he go out and film Animal House 2 with John Landis?
Oh, no. Oh, no, Harmon.
Did he keep to the crazy fat guy kind of roles, drinking too much?
He left. He left Saturday Night Live, and then he wanted to change. He wanted to get a little, you know, not a little wacky, but he needed something to kind of develop as an actor. So he one of his last movies he did was he picked this romantic comedy called Continental Divide, which he plays a newspaper reporter from. Guess the city.
Chicago.
That's right. Yep.
Okay, so Scott, when you think Continental Divide in the plot line, is it a fish in water story or is it a fish out of water story?
Oh, Harmon, no. There are no fishes in the water in this story. They're all out of the water.
Yeah, so I think again it flopped massively at the box office. I think people just don't even remember Continental Divide, but it was kind of devoid of all the Belushi-isms, so to speak, you know, showing that he did want to take on more challenging roles and not kind of just coast on autopilot as, you know, the quote-unquote Belushi sort of role. But as you said, it was a romantic comedy.
And yeah, you're kind of, yeah.
Think really America really wanted to see romantic lead Belushi? I mean, sadly.
And you're kind of wondering why he was, I mean, I guess like we were saying, he's probably trying to stretch himself a little bit, but there's just nothing, you know, there's no, other than his character being from Chicago. That's about the only thing about this movie that I could see maybe appealing to him.
Yeah, he was a big city news reporter in this one.
Yeah.
But okay, so you said that Belushi, you know, managed to stay clean during, you know, Continental Divide and after the Blues Brothers kind of cleaned up his act, which brings us to the trailer we had up front for the 1981, was it 81 it came out, movie, Neighbors?
Yeah, 81, that was his last one, December. It was a holiday movie, believe it or not, Harmon.
Yeah. So again, what we talked about on the Blues Brothers, I think why the Blues Brothers succeeded and why Neighbors failed were for the same reasons. Like Blues Brothers, they totally probably let, you know, Belushi and Aykroyd and John Landis do what they want. But I think this one got kind of squashed by the studio.
A little bit more ways than one. I mean, Aykroyd and Belushi didn't think that the director, John Avildsen, had any kind of comic chops, and they didn't want him on the set.
Didn't you see, like, Adrian? Did you see Rocky? Adrian!
Yeah.
There's, oh, he's by the way, just a footnote. There's a kind of a creepy, rapey scene in Rocky and Adrian where she keeps saying
that.
No.
Yeah, that's
he's like,
right.
No, what do you mean, no? And then she's like, no, no. And she's like, her head's down and she's shaking her head. He's
I haven't
like,
seen
Rocky. No. And she's like, no. And then somehow he sort of forces himself on her.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in a while, so I'll take it from Jason Schwartzman's mom. I'll believe her.
Yeah, and Francis Ford Coppola's sister.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so with Neighbors, on paper, this seems like they had a hit on their hands. Like, you know, Rocky won the Oscar. You had Larry Gelbart. What do you know of Larry Gelbart, Scott?
He was one of the writers on the TV show MASH, Harmon. That's what I know of him.
Was he writer or creator of MASH?
Writer,
was
creator. It? I'm
well,
pretty
well,
sure
actually,
he wrote some of them.
You know, MASH was Robert Altman movie, so yeah. So he wouldn't be creator.
Right, that's from the Robert
Altman, movie before that.
Yeah.
Starring one of my favorite 70s actors, Elliot Gould. I love Elliot
Gould. Oh, yeah. And Tom Skerritt, dude, can't go wrong. Can't go wrong. Matt, it's a little heavy on the toxic masculinity, but it's got some good parts in it. Looking back.
Yeah. On. So on paper, so you had Academy Award winning director. You had a guy who created, you know, probably one of the most iconic, you know, TV shows of the 70s. You had Aykroyd and Belushi again after, you know, just very shortly after the Blues Brothers, but yet the film just tanked. And if you watch it, it kind of sucks.
Yeah, you've seen it then?
I saw it a long time ago. It's just like, I remember like a scene where Belushi's in quicksand or something.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, I mean, part of it was that they were supposed to, like, right during pre-production, they decided to swap roles, Aykroyd and Belushi. With Aykroyd playing the wacky one and Belushi playing the button-down neighbor. And I think there was a good quote from the Bob Woodward's book, Wired, which we won't talk about the movie. But Belushi's substance of problems on the set were like negatively affecting production. Here's a quote from the book. When John emerged from this trailer on Neighbors, he could hardly talk. It wasn't simply that John didn't know his lines or he had a few drinks. He was blitzed. Everyone stood around looking at one another. John, aware that he was not making any sense, finally stumbled back to his trailer. There was silence on the set, and Avildsen announced they would wait.
Yeah, so unlike Blues Brothers, where Belushi could sort of function on the drugs, here he just couldn't function on the drugs. And, you know, we've both been on film sets, and you know there's, dozens and dozens of people doing jobs involved. And if the star can't function, everything just shuts down. Like, and all these people are made to wait. As I found out when I co-starred with a drunken O.J. Simpson in the straight-to-DVD prank show, Juiced.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
So like you mentioned, Scott, Belushi and Aykroyd didn't get along with the director. And like you said, they believed that he had no understanding of comedy. So Belushi actually kind of lobbied to get him removed from the film and replaced by John Landis, who directed both The Blues Brothers and Animal House. And after the exploits of filming Blues Brothers, what was John Landis's reaction to taking over filming Neighbors?
I'm busy.
God, I think, I think it just would have been too much. So like you said, there was trouble. They switched roles. Belushi's drug problems worsened. So again, like Ackroyd would try to make changes to the script. You know, like he wrote the script to Blues Brothers, and he, you know, right, later went on to write the script with Harold Ramis of Ghostbusters. But Larry Gelbart didn't like the changes.
Mm.
So I think, and here is a prime example of how they kind of lost creative control and had a different vision for the movie. So the Neighbor soundtrack was done by, I think, Tom Conti.
Yeah, Tom Conti.
Did he do the Rocky theme? Bill Conti.
Bill Conti, yes.
Did he do the Rocky theme, Bill Conti?
I'm pretty sure that's the same guy. Do you want me to check?
I think he might have done the theme, but the theme to Rocky might have been done by Chuck Mangione.
No, dude, though. Shit.
Not at all.
Yeah, it was Bill Conti. Bill Conti did the theme to Rocky.
Yeah, and also The Right Stuff, and For Your Eyes Only.
Yeah,
but
he also did the soundtrack to Neighbors. That is correct.
Yeah, but here's who Belushi wanted to do the soundtrack, which you could tell would be a completely different kind of vision. He wanted the LA punk band Fear to be doing the title track to Neighbors. And they actually recorded some songs for the movie, which you can find on YouTube. And the songs were produced by Steve Cropper, who Scott, just to bring us back to last episode, was Steve Cropper.
He was the guitar player in the Blues Brothers band.
Exactly. One of the original Blues Brothers himself. Mm-hmm. And Belushi, big punk fan. There's actually a video of him, I think in like 1977, 78, playing drums because he was a drummer. Because as we learned in episode one, what was the name of his band? The Ravens?
The Ravens, yes.
Yeah, I fucking love the Ravens. He played drums.
Jolly Green Giant.
Yeah. He played drums one night at CBGB's with the Dead Boys, legendary All punk right. band, the All Dead right, Boys. Yeah. And there's actually a YouTube video of it. So
cool.
He wanted the band Fear, and the guy, the Suits, kind of nixed it.
Yeah, the studio said no thank you. Because apparently they just kind of they replaced the Fear. They pulled it out of the soundtrack at the last minute, and they didn't tell anybody. And just replaced it with the orchestral score.
Yeah, it's weird. I listened to that the Fear title yeah. song, and now Neighbors. It just sounds like kind of like a pop song. But it back does. Then it was probably like punk, so punk.
Well, the crazy thing is, I'm not a huge Fear fan, but
Leaving,
and then they were one of the few punk bands that used a saxophone.
They actually had a song called New York's All Right If You Like Saxophones.
Yeah, exactly, which they played.
That was like
one
of their so-called hits from the, what's her name? Penelope Spears movie.
Sure.
The Pine of Western Civilization. It's a great movie.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. So that, and actually, that's a good segue into kind of the next time where these guys pop up, is that... to make up for Fear getting pulled from the soundtrack, Belushi said that he'd get them a guest spot on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, which he did, and I think it got cut from the final sort of mix because they used profanity in one of their songs.
They got it was on air, but it got pulled at the end, and it turns into a huge. You can see it on YouTube, and that was from the Halloween 1981 episode. It was hosted by Donald Pleasance.
I love Donald Pleasance. Kind of somebody in this mix once met his niece.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. <Went off.
laughs> So anyways, so it was 1981. Fear played on the show, and it was very edgy because on Saturday Night Live, they actually showed people stage diving in the mosh pit during their performance. And that was like considered very edgy at the time.
Yeah. That was it. So it was on. It was aired, but they just cut it short. And the weird thing is they played, instead of like what you're used to with Saturday Night Live now, just them playing one song and then doing sketches and stuff, they had them go on for, they played three songs all in a row for some reason.
Did that like on the early days with like Paul Simon, where it'd be almost all music.
Yeah, but this is later on. This is like 81, so I don't know why they did it that way. But apparently there were some famous people in the audience as well, moshing. Like I know Ian McKay from Fugazi was in there, and there were a couple other guys. I can't remember who else,
Oh, nice. So Belushi's reaction to a private screening of Neighbors, do you know what happened, Scott?
No, Harmon, tell me.
It caused him to physically beat the side of his chair with a shoe over his anger at the cut Avedon had assembled. Avedon had assembled.
Yeah, that's not good.
Just that, but that's just so, I kind of think brings back the old country Armenian or Albanian in him.
Yeah, he likes throwing shoes. Like the Iraqi guy threw a shoe at Bush. There's something about shoes.
Yeah, so after that, Belushi was banned from all future screenings of Neighbors. And as with Continental Divide, both movies were both artistic and commercial failures.
You're stupid. Everybody so stupid.
Yes.
Which sadly kind of brings about a series of perpetual events. That kind of brought about Belushi's final demise. One of them was his grandmother passed away, who was, you know, a big influence on Belushi's life.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. And also...
he also lost his trusty bodyguard, who would keep the drugs away from him.
Yeah, and then he just kind of gave up. Yeah, like there was, so Smokey has stories about that, how, at one point you just got to go, like, dude, I can't, there's nothing I can do. But Smokey also said, and this will come into play later, Smokey said that they could call upon him anytime if they needed more help with John.
Yeah, and he also became estranged with his wife, who, as we talked about in episode one of our history of John Belushi, they were high school sweethearts back in Illinois.
So that's either going to work or it's not.
Yeah, so there was, again, there was that Showtime documentary recently on Belushi. And I think, as we talked about almost in almost every episode, was at the height of his fame, he had the number one TV show, the number one movie, and the number one album. But in the Showtime documentary, he said his father never laughed at anything that he did and wanted him to join the family business, which was helping run his restaurant. So I think part of Belushi's downfall was he couldn't make his father laugh.
Oh, sad.
Because, there's two sad stories I heard about Belushi, because we're coming to the sad end here. When he was like so fucked up on drugs in L.A., he would be driving around L.A. in a limo, and he'd tell the limo driver to pull over. We'd just see a random group of people walking by. And he would roll down his window and stick out his face so they would all start screaming. Yeah. Which, just think about just being so fucked up on drugs and having to do that. That's kind of not healthy.
No, that's not a good sign.
And even in the early days, before the Blues Brothers, Aykroyd and Belushi took a road trip across country. And Belushi, they drove by a school. And he told Aykroyd to pull over. He said, watch this. And he walked up to the window of the school and stuck his face in. And everyone went, Bluto. More charming.
That's like, that's kind of fun. Yeah, that's kind of.
Yeah. You're not coked out of your head in a limousine on Sunset Boulevard doing that at like 3 a.m. So before he died, he was working on a bunch of projects. Scott, what do you recall of what Belushi was working on, right before his death? What we could have maybe have seen him in, if he didn't sadly pass away.
One of the last things he was working on was a diamond smuggling caper called A Noble Rot with Jay Sandrich.
That one was called Moon Over Miami. Oh, or did it get changed to...
No, we'll see.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
No, well, there's two different things talking about here. So there's that one. So he was working on the drug smuggling caper called Moon Over Miami, which I'm wondering. I was double checking to see if I was distracted, because I remember there was an '80s movie called Moon Over Parador. I think I was wondering if they were two.
And there's related. Also a Denny's menu item called Moon Over.
Oh, Moon Over Miami, of course. That's the first thing I was thinking of.
Yeah.
There's that movie, but then this is the one I've actually kind of heard of about, read a bit about, and I think they actually came up with a draft for it. This movie called Noble Rot that Belushi was writing with Don Novello,
Father Guido Sarducci.
Father Guido Sarducci, yeah. So, and that's all about Noble Rot is about a wine based comedy. Noble Rot's like some kind of a rotness that happens to grapes that results in specially tasty vintages.
Yeah, Don Novelli, he's a Bay Area guy, so probably got that from maybe he grew up near wine country. I know he lives in Marin County now.
Does he? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I remember him. He would pop up to some comedy events every now and then.
Really? Yeah. He was a funny guy. The Laszlo Letters. We'll have to do a whole episode about
that. Oh, those are excellent. That was the pre-prank TV show thing before that, which you do back in the day when people would send each other physical bits of paper with stuff written on them in U.S. mail. Before you can just like email them.
Email, yeah, back in the day.
This is funny, not funny, funny like peculiar, not funny, haha. Police Squad, directed and created by the Zucker brothers who did Airplane. So that show had a running gag where the guest star dying right away, you know, in the opening sequence.
Yeah, ended up being the show, yep.
So, oh man, so Belushi filmed one of those and then he died. And shortly after, they cut it and replaced it with a segment with William Conrad.
Yeah, so that was Cannon, I think. Well, he's not Ironside, that was somebody else. William Conrad, he was like the Cannon, I think, was the one.
Yeah, so somewhere in a canister is that footage of Belushi.
Ew, that'd be weird to see.
Yeah. So Scott, which leads us to the night of February 28, 1982. What, to your recollection, happened there at the Chateau Marmont on Sunset Boulevard?
Oh, Harmon. It's almost like you're beginning podcasting. There's so much that went on before they even went to the. I dug up a couple interesting bits because there's actually a lot that went on.
Oh yeah, the joy of sex. Tell them about that.
Yeah, so they were trying to get Belushi to do this kind of, wound up being a teen comedy called based on the book The Joy of Sex, where basically he was going to appear and be in a diaper for some reason. I'm not quite sure how that all worked out, but basically
do you think it was like, I read sort of a synopsis, do you think it was like kind of they're trying to be like Woody Allen's Everything You Wanted to Know About Sex type movie?
It could be. I mean, that's why I actually went and watched some of the movie. The movie's a typical just kind of 80s sex comedy. It was actually directed by the woman that did Valley Girl. So, I mean, it's just, but it's not even like a particularly sex-based comedy. It's just more like a high school romp type thing.
How would it, could you have seen how Belushi could have possibly have fit into that?
Not really at all. But Christopher Lloyd's in it, so that's interesting. And this would be the year, yeah.
And he and Christopher Lloyd co-starred with Belushi in Going South.
Oh, that's right. Oh,
Jack Nicholson. His interesting. First movie.
Maybe they were trying to get him in on the Christopher Lloyd thing.
Or maybe that was the Belushi role.
Yeah. So before he even gets to the chateau, Belushi had to go in to deal with his manager, Bernie Brillstein, a famous comedy manager.
I've had a meeting with Bernie Brillstein before he died.
Oh, man, how was it?
I went to his office back in the Jokioki days, and I was just thrilled to, legendary comedy manager.
Uh-huh, and how was it?
It was fine. I made Bernie Brillstein laugh. And he passed away.
Did he give you off you a beverage or something?
I think you always get offered a bottle of water by the assistant.
Oh, nice. Nice. Okay, cool.
But what he offered Belushi.
No. Well, see, Belushi was there, and he said he needed some money to buy a guitar. So
$1,500. Yeah, first of all, that just sounds so fishy.
Yeah, and Bernie wouldn't give it to him. But then Belushi comes back to the office while Bernie's got clients there, and Belushi asks him again, and Brillstein didn't want to turn down Belushi in front of other people, so he gave him the money.
That's just as creepy as when Jane Curtin said she would catch Belushi going through her purse.
Yeah, yeah. So Belushi took all this money, and then that day he had met up with a woman by the name of Kathy Smith, and she was kind of escorting Belushi around town. Now, most of the time, in most of these accounts, she kind of comes in as a footnote, but she was actually kind of a long time. I don't want to say she was a backup singer for a lot of bands, and then kind of a groupie hanger on going far back to the 70s. So she actually was kind of connected to Levon Helm, the guy from the band.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And she kind of was travel with the band, and there was a rumor that she and Levon had a child or were going to have a child. But then later on, she wound up kind of being the drug connection for big bands, big rock and roll bands, the Rolling Stones. So she was kind of I don't know if she's a backup singer, but she was the person who was getting them their drugs.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's always that, yep. If you've ever seen, the band The Happy Mondays or documentary on them,
oh, yeah.
They would have a guy playing maracas,
right?
Only because he was the drug dealer for the band.
Yeah,
so she was the maraca player.
She was, but here's the other crazy thing. So apparently, for a while she hooked up with Gordon Lightfoot and the Canadian kind of soft
wreck of
rock
the Edmund
singer.
Fitzgerald.
Dude, so apparently the song "Sundown" was written about her. Gordon Lightfoot admitted this. Admitted as much to this. So that's kind of interesting. I was trying to find, because he kept going on about how beautiful she was, and I was trying to find a picture of her back in the 70s.
Probably in her 20s. Yes.
I couldn't find.
Kind of did a lot of drugs.
Yeah. So
to
I
the
couldn't
point,
find,
which leads us to that evening in bungalow number 3.
Well, we're still not there yet. So at this point, Kathy and Belushi are driving around L.A. just doing a bunch of drugs and trying to score more. And then they go to the famous Roxy Club in L.A. and wind up hanging out there. So I didn't even know this part. They wind up hanging out there for 5 hours. Apparently there's a secret cocktail bar at the top where you can kind of go and do whatever. And that's where they go and she shoots them up with her first speedball. Of the night. So this is before midnight even.
Was Robert De Niro in the picture at this time?
Not yet, dude. They're still hanging out at the Roxy doing speedballs in the bathroom. And yeah. And then they keep driving around, and at one point Belushi starts making phone calls. I don't know if there's a phone call from the car or anything, but he's making
probably
phone
on
calls.
A shoebox size cell phone.
Yeah, but he leaves a last drunken message for Dan Aykroyd, which Aykroyd can't even decipher. It's just so messed up. And then
That's
him,
just
And then, it's so creepy. He goes over to Belushi's wife's house, which was like a walk over in Greenwich Village from him. Mm-hmm. And they decide that tomorrow they're going to go out and intervene. And they call up Smokey, the bodyguard. And they go, okay, can you go out can you fly out from Virginia, where he was living, to L.A. tomorrow morning to kind of go help John out? And he's like, yeah, sure, no problem. But it was a bit late for that.
Yeah, so I believe like at some point back at the bungalow, Robin Williams dropped by and Robert De Niro. I think Harry Dean Stanton.
Okay, yeah.
And they just said the bungalow was just like trash. There was just like pizza boxes everywhere and it was like completely, it just looked like kind of like a junkie den.
Yeah, and this was
which it was.
Yeah, and for those of you keeping track at home, this is bungalow number 3 over at the Chateau Miramont.
Yeah, Miramont. So what was there any more to just Robert Williams and De Niro stopping by?
I read that Williams stopped by while Kathy was there, and he actually got so creeped out by her that he left. Like he thought she was really kind of creepy, just kind of bad energy, so he left. I don't know much about the Robert De Niro.
Can I do an imitation of Robin Williams popping by? Because he did a lot of coke back then himself.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, there comes it.
That's good. And then what would Robert, what would Robert, a little bit. I don't care for that.
I can only do Robert De Niro. I could facially do him.
So okay. Yeah.
I'm squinting my eyes and raising my eyebrows, if you could see.
I don't care for that.
And then I'm putting my hands out, kind of like. Yeah. It's more Al Capone, Robert De Niro.
Don't care for that. So they kind of stayed up all night partying, and apparently Kathy says so she shot Belushi up with one more speedball, and then he kind of passed out, and then she left. She left around in the morning sometime.
Oh, and then at 12 noon the next day on Friday, March 5th, 1982, Belushi's fitness trainer and occasional bodyguard Bill Wallace arrived at the bungalow to deliver a typewriter and audio cassette recordings because Belushi requested them the previous day. What did Wallace find?
Belushi's lifeless body, and the first thing he did was call Bernie Brillstein and said, "We've got a problem." Just to clarify, Harmon, I think we said that So his last night that he was out partying was actually the night of March the 4th, 1982.
Oh, March. Oh, what did we say? February.
Yeah, this is March 4th.
Okay. Okay. We got it. So, like you said, the cause of death was a combined drug intoxication involving cocaine and heroin, known by its name, Speedball.
Mm-hmm.
Was Kathy Smith, was she arrested, or how did it go down?
No, she wasn't there. She actually, I didn't want to say, no, she left. So she injected, now I remember, and it could all make sense. She injected Belushi, and then she left. He was snoring, she says, when she left. So she left at about 10 in the morning. And then, so you were saying, the trader comes in at noon, and he's dead. And then she'd kind of like disappeared. And then they, at some point the police arrested her for questioning, and, she kind of wiggled out of it. She didn't get arrested for that. And then at one point she gave an interview to the, National Enquirer about 2 months after Belushi's death, and she got paid for this, of course. And then she admitted that she'd been with him at the night. She admitted she'd been there, and she'd given him the fatal dose. And so when that article came out, the cops had to do something, and they reopened the case. And then they charged her.
And again, if she's doing stories for the Enquirer, she's probably just, because they would pay a lot of money for this story. So she's probably still an addict.
Mm-hmm.
And just like, I'll do a story.
Yep. So she was arrested. They extradited her from Ontario and charged with first degree murder. And she, the plea bargain reduced the charge to involuntary manslaughter, and she served 15 months in prison.
That's all. And I just looked it up, and she only passed away this year.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. It was crazy.
Yeah. So again, Belushi, he was end up being buried out in Martha's Vineyard, which he loved Martha's Vineyard. His wife arranged for a traditional Orthodox Christian funeral that was conducted by an Albanian Orthodox priest. Belushi's tombstone had a skull and crossbones with the inscription, "I may be gone, but rock and roll lives on." It's true. Rock and roll does live on.
You can't kill rock and roll, dude.
Yeah, so do they just leave his body in Martha's Vineyard?
Well, no, Harmon, because sadly it turned into a Jim Morrison-type situation where people were kind of going to the grave to party and leaving gifts, so the family didn't care for that too much. So they moved his grave to his body to an unmarked grave nearby.
Yeah, so, you know, after Belushi's death, not one, not two books came out. The aforementioned 1984 biography, Wired, by none other than Trump biographer. What's his first name? Woodward?
Bob.
Bob Woodward. Yeah, sorry. I mean, it's so hot in here, dude. It's just my brain.
You're almost there, dude.
Yeah. So that came out, and did that make all the friends and family of Belushi happy? Bob Woodward, who cracked the Nixon Watergate scandal.
Oh, no.
We're happy about that.
That made no one happy. And then, but the main thing I remember about that book is that they tried to make it into a movie.
The guy from The Shield, Michael Chiklis.
But like that thing was just trapped in development hell for so long. And then it was just like, you know, it blacklisted everybody who was in it or wanted to be in it. And it was just like,
Yeah, I saw an interview with Michael Chiklis just saying, you know, he was like waiting tables before he got that part.
Yeah.
He's just like, what are you going to do? It's like, I'm a waiter.
Yep.
Am I going to take the movie or not take the movie?
Exactly.
And then it came out and it tanked, and he just thought he would never, you know, work again. And he's, you know, had a pretty long career.
Yeah, he's okay.
Only because he's really talented.
Yeah.
I believe a Minneapolis guy got cast as Aykroyd. I can't remember his name in that movie. Yeah. But Belushi's wife wrote a 1990 biography on him called Samurai Widow. So that was more kind of like the human Belushi, where Bob Woodward was just kind of, you know, relaying the facts.
Right, the drugs.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Yeah, so let's just talk about, I believe let's wrap up our four-part episode. Scott, we've never done a four-part episode.
That's crazy, dude. That's a whole...
I know. Are you kind of sad, Scott, that we're this is all the four parts are coming to a close?
Not really, dude. I just don't want to do
this. Will cheer you up. Chris Farley, who modeled his life after Belushi, also died of a drug overdose at age 33.
Yeah, by himself in his apartment. Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyways, like Chris Farley, I believe, you know, they say that Chris Farley, no one could match him as a live sketch performer. You know, just as far as like pure energy, and he roughly came from the same region. He's a Wisconsin guy, but you know, close to where Belushi, you know, by a few hours grew up.
Yep.
But you know, Farley was sort of like a one note, where Belushi was like, you know, he was actually a good actor. If you look at some like the early SNL things where he got to play different, you know, kind of characters.
Yeah.
But, you know, to celebrate the legacy of Belushi, in 2004, he got his own star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. You can find it at 6355 Hollywood Boulevard.
Oh, nice. Okay. That'll be a little Comedy History 101 road trip.
But, Scott, what I think the biggest tribute, post-tribute to Belushi came in, was it 1984 Ghostbusters came out?
The Ghostbusters came out in 1984, yes, sir.
So, Scott, what is Belushi's connection to Ghostbusters?
Well, actually, you see, Harmon, Aykroyd originally had written a part in Ghostbusters for Belushi. This was one of the projects he was trying to get him interested in, other than the diaper wearing joy of sex movies. This was one of many projects he was working on, but Belushi passed away, of course, before they could get around to it.
Yeah, but there was a character called Slimer.
Yeah, but that wasn't, I think later on, like later on, Dan Aykroyd kind of refers to that as the ghost of John Belushi in the movie. I don't think it wasn't done beforehand.
But yeah, I mean, Ivan Reitman, who he was the producer of Animal House, directed by John Landis, he thought that the ghost looked like Bluto from Animal House. So
yeah.
Aykroyd would refer to Slimer as the ghost of John Belushi, which is
indeed
kind of a funny tribute to him.
Yeah, that's a nice one. So he kind of is in Ghostbusters.
Yeah, but here's one of my favorite post-Belushi tribute is in Albania, they issued a John Belushi stamp.
Dude,
because
that's...
I think he's pretty much the most famous Albanian. Because
he is.
most famous comedians.
Yeah, most famous Albanian-American comedians. And in 2015, John Belushi was ranked by Rolling Stone as the greatest SNL cast member of all time.
See, I said that in episode one of this. But yeah, I mean, again, comedy is all subjective.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to be Charles Rocket as number one.
No. We all know what happened to him. Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with, I would say, you know, we'll end this on a high note, that Belushi was the greatest cast member of SNL. Because, you know, again, it's we're talking sketch comedy, we're talking a multitude of characters, we're not talking about how much he went through Jane Curtin's purse backstage.
No.
We're talking, he was so good, and because of drugs, he would not show up at rehearsals, but still, you know, hit the mark every time once the cameras were.
Yeah, once he was on when he was ready. When most of the time, when it came to do business, he was bringing the heat.
Yeah. So anyway, Scott, that wraps up, you know, four episodes on John Belushi. We have learned a hell of a lot about John Belushi by researching this. Any final Belushi takeaways on the man?
Well,
from
Harmon,
Illinois.
Harmon, I'm going to quote one of the first ladies of one of the presidents of the 80s, Nancy Reagan, where I'm just going to say, just say no. If somebody asks you to do drugs, just say no.
Yeah, but meanwhile, your husband is giving a pass to dictators who are smuggling coke and flooding the streets.
Well, that's a whole other podcast. Yeah.
And that, my friends, wraps up four episodes on the history of John Belushi. If you haven't heard the other episodes, go back and check them out. If you really think about it, he really had a short shelf life of comedy in the public eye, but, you know, did a great body of work that ranges from, you know, stage to radio to movies to music.
Harmon, I have one last thing to end this on, just because, as our listeners know, I'm broadcasting straight out of Berlin here, and for some reason when I pull up a web page, so occasionally I get the German page instead of the English one, but I noticed this, I didn't know what it was, and now I was like, oh, that's interesting. So I have the German version of Animal House. Are you ready
for this?
What
do they call it?
the title of it in German is Ich glaube mich tritt ein Pferd, which means, I believe I'm meeting a horse.
I'm meeting a horse?
Yes.
Okay, they did have the horse scene in it.
Yeah, they had the horse scene in there. I'm not quite sure. I'll double check my translation, but you can... That was kind of odd. That is a very odd...
maybe that horse is a euphemism for something.
Okay. Well, no, it's the literal translation, but it's like kind of a phrase, so it just means I can't believe this.
Ah, okay. I can't believe this house.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't believe this house, sure.
I think that's a perfect note to end four episodes of John Belushi. And with that, it's time to...
Plug away. Scott, what do you have to plug?
Well, Armin, just like we said, like we were talking about a couple times in the episode, I do a YouTube channel about presidential trivia, all things presidential, all sorts of found presidential audio goodness called This is the President, which you can find on YouTube at youtube.com/thisisthepresident. We also have a partner podcast that Harmon sometimes guest stars with me on there, which you can also find wherever you find your favorite podcast. That's This is the President.
Hear, hear, hear. And I'll make my plugs very, very quick because as I mentioned up front in the cold opening, I am in Costa Rica. I am in an apartment with all the windows and doors shut. I am feeling like I'm an equivalent of an oven. And by the way, Scott, this is the first episode I've taped without wearing a shirt.
Whoa, that's a little TMI.
And ready for the joke? Ready for the joke?
Uh-huh.
Not wearing pants all the time.
All right, yes.
Because that's what you do in the Zoom meetings.
Yeah. I know, that's so funny.
The joke said, says the joke said by everyone making a Zoom joke.
I think it's time for you to go and meet some friends at the Man Cave.
Yeah, so anyways, if you love Comedy History 101, show your love so other people can find out about us. Go out and like, subscribe, and comment wherever you get your podcasts. Just show your love, people. That's all we ask. Also, check out our website. You can comment there at comedyhistory101.com. Also, be a sponsor of Comedy History 101 via our Patreon page at patreon.com/CH101. Throw in a few bucks each month and we will soon have exclusive podcast content. Soon as you people start signing up, we will start producing and buying new microphones.
Yes.
So with that, thanks a lot for tuning in and bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude. Stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Bravo, bros.
Good job.